You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates. You're listening to Absolute Empowerment with Coach Jeff Connors on The Sports Objective. Join Coach C, a USA Strength and Conditioning Hall of Famer, every Monday night to see in a variety of guests, including former players, former and current coaches, pastors, and others will discuss relevant issues in coaching today's athlete, with the goal of equipping the athlete and those coaching them with the physical, mental, and spiritual armor necessary to live their best life. Here's Coach Connors.
Welcome to our 14th show. Today we have with us former UNC head football coach and Philadelphia Eagles linebacker, Coach John Bunning. Coach, great to have you here with us today.
Good to be with you.
Can't tell you how honored I was for you to hire me at UNC Chapel Hill. It was a hell of a ride for me, and I can't ever thank you enough for that experience. And I gained so much respect for you during the time that I was there. Your background, what you stood for, the way you handled the staff, the family atmosphere that you promoted. Definitely one of the best experiences in my coaching career. And I definitely want to thank you very much for that experience.
Much appreciated there. And you were one of my first hires. And I never regretted it one single second. You were what I wanted in a strength coach. And having you around my staff, it was important. And yet we didn't win enough games to stay afloat. Yeah. But, and I mentioned this earlier, you got to have a quarterback. If you don't have a quarterback, you're not going to win. Yeah. If you don't win, you're going to get fired. But I enjoyed my time there. It was one of my goals in my life. Once I graduated from the University of North Carolina and went up to Philly to play a little ball, I always wanted to return. And I got that opportunity. And I'm extremely thankful that I did.
Well, Coach, I want to go through your journey a little bit for the listening audience. A little bit about your background here. From 1969 to 1971, you were playing at UNC. And in 1971, the Tar Heels won the ACC, gained an ACC title in 71. From 72 to 82, you played for the Philadelphia Eagles. From 83 to 84, the Philadelphia Stars. And then in 1985, I believe you started to, was a coach for the Baltimore Stars?
That's correct.
And then in 86 at Brown University, at from 87 to 92, you were the head coach at Glassboro State that I guess changed to Rowan, the name Rowan.
That's right. Henry Rowan gave $100 million to Glassboro State to start an engineering program. And they took that money and said, hey, let's name the college after him.
Yes, sir. And then 1993 to 96, you were with the Kansas City Chiefs. Coach D. Ends, and then linebackers. In 1997, you were with the Rams coaching linebackers. 1988 to 1999, co-defensive coordinator, which culminated in a Super Bowl victory. 2000 with the Saints coaching linebackers, and then 2001 to 2006 at UNC Chapel Hill as the head football coach at your alma mater. And boy, Coach, what a great career. What a blessing all your experiences are. And, you know, what a platform you have now to influence others from your great experiences. And so I wanted to ask you first about the experience in Silver Spring that brought you to a scholarship at UNC Chapel Hill. Who were your influences and maybe what were some of your challenges growing up?
Well, I tell you, that's the first thing that I would say about myself is that I had two very, very fine parents. And they were Maine people. They were New Englanders. They were old school. Things were done the right way. Everything, I had two brothers, an older and a younger. And my parents did a terrific job raising them, did a terrific job reining me in every once in a while. Every once in a while, yeah. I need to get reined in. But I grew up, I was born in Maine. They're from Maine. I would go up there on vacation when I was a little kid and go to this lake that we now own a property on, same yep. lake that I went to as a kid. And but having two brothers, I think was great for me. I was the middle child. My older brother was a football player and a really fine wrestler. And Jeff, you know enough about wrestling. That's a very, very intense sport. And I grew to enjoy that environment. As a matter of fact, I went out for the wrestling team, quit basketball for one practice. That was it. That's all I could take of that wrestling stuff. So I went back to basketball. But, having two brothers was a lot of fun. We were spaced out. I think dad always wanted somebody to be around to mow the lawn, you know. So, yeah. We had a good time growing up, and for me, I didn't play football until my sophomore year in high school. There was no programs for kids back in the day, but I loved basketball. I loved playing baseball, following my older brother and seeing how intense he was. Going from a 165-pound class as a junior, dropping down 11 pounds to 154 so he could wrestle the previous champion from the year before. He wanted to get that guy. I drew a lot from my older brother. My parents were always at every one of their games, my games. It was a terrific childhood for me growing up there in Silver Spring, Maryland. And then I thought for sure I'd be going to the University of Maryland. Bob Ward was the head football coach at the time, and his son, Jim Ward, was the tailback. I was the fullback. His son was the shortstop. I was the third baseman. His son was the shooting guard. I was the point guard. So I was always around Bob Ward and his son. Thought for sure I was going to Maryland, but I went down and made a trip to North Carolina. Bill Dooley, the head football coach, really, really impacted me on the visit. And then when he came to school, Springbrook High School, there in Silver Spring, Maryland, that really impressed me, and I became a Tar Heel.
Gotcha. Well, some of that I hadn't heard before, so very interesting. I met your parents, of course, several times.
Yes.
And your dad had an interesting nickname. Was it Dad Boy?
Dad Boy. Yeah. Part dad, part boy. Yes.
That's awesome, man.
He was a golfer. He was a horseshoe player. He had some talent, and he was in the service during World War II, and when that all ended, he ended up going to work for the government, and he worked at Fort Meade. He was he had a badge, and the last three digits on his badge were 007. And we used to call him, he was the spy. He was the spy of the family. And we never knew any of the work that he did. He was he was an analyst. And all I know is that when the Cuban Missile Crisis was going on, we were building a bomb shelter downstairs.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, and my mom was a very, very strong lady. And my dad lived to 100 years old.
Wow. So I didn't know that. That's awesome.
What I have not ruined playing 13 years on the Philadelphia AstroTurf, I have a good gene pool to draw from. My mom lived to like 93. She had a little dementia towards the end, but hey, we all get some of that, you know?
Yes, sir. What did you weigh going into UNC?
I went from about 175 pounds as a junior to about 190 pounds as a senior in high school. And I probably entered Carolina as a freshman, weighing about that, about 200 pounds. And gotcha. Then I finished at about 215, 216 when I entered the pro ball. And that's what I played at for the most part. I maybe got into the 220s a couple different times, but after reconstructive ACL surgery, I dropped back down to 216, 217. So I was a lightweight, but I had really good coaching at North Carolina, particularly my position coach. He taught me how to roll the hips and snap people up, particularly the tight ends. I love playing over a tight end.
Yeah. Well, you know, talk a little bit about Bill Dooley and the way that he coached and, you know, kind of the things that he hung his hat on, what was important, what were the things that got your team to, you know, the ACC title. And, of course, I met many of your teammates and became friends with them myself to an extent. You know, what a great group of men, you know, just incredible, you know, Don McCauley and Ted and all those guys. And I know that it was a very tight-knit group, and I know that that was certainly part of the deal as far as what you got you guys to the ACC title. And, of course, I don't ever forget Timmy Kirkpatrick either. few things about Dooley, maybe. What do you think about
it? Let me just say this about that to begin with. Three weeks ago, we had a reunion of the 1970, 1971, and 1972 bowl teams coached by Bill Dooley. I organized it. I got it going. We had about 60 players back in Chapel Hill. And we were down in that new part of the stadium called the Blue Zone. We had a Friday night dinner. I had some special guests there. I had Woody Durham's wife, Jean, there at the event. I had Marie Dooley came in with an escort, and she was there. So we got to introduce all these people, all these special guests. We had a love fest for Friday night. Saturday, we went down to a place called Blues on Franklin, right down the street from the top of the hill. And we had a brunch there at like 10:30. We had about 100 people there. And from there, we split. It was a night game. They were playing Pittsburgh. Andre was coaching, of course, for the Pitt Panthers. And Frank Cignetti was also – he's the offensive coordinator there. But we then had a tailgate. It started at 4 o'clock. Teresa Vanderford, my old secretary, helped me organize all this stuff. And she had the tailgate going. And we just – it was a love fest for 2 days. And it was great that I had Dawn, my head coach, my lady, my wife, was there. We all had a blast. Saw so many of these guys, the Keith Hickses and the Ron Jabuskis and Timmy Kirkpatrick was there. Ted Elkins, of course, was there. He was out front. We got introduced in between the first and the second quarter. And I think Ted was doing some somersaults or something like that. You know, we just had a great, great time. And, you know, that group, very special, tough mentality that Bill Dooley pressed us with. I mean, we, you know, back in the day, we went 3-a-days for the first 3 days, no pads. They had that rule in. But when we went to spring practice or we were in summer camp, we were a hitting group of players. Yeah. We hit all the time. That really prepared me for pro football. I mean, training camp was long, but it was easy compared to what we went through with Bill Dooley. And he gradually got the players that he wanted. We'd like to run the football. And we had a guy, Don McCauley, that broke O.J. Simpson's record, single season record, with, I think, 1,700 yards his senior year. But we had an offensive line. We ran the football. And Paul Miller was our quarterback. He was also at the reunion with his bride. And, you know, we were a hitting defense. We played three deep. All we did was play man to man all the time. And, but you know, those guys, up front with the offensive line and the guys up front with our defensive line made it easier for us linebackers to run around and make tackles. But, spring ball, you know, I'll never forget this, Jeff. This is an interesting story. My sophomore year, we lose at Duke, and Bill Dooley at our annual dinner to go back over the season and had a dinner out. He said the words, "That Duke game left a bad taste in my mouth." That meant spring practice was going to be one bear, and we did. So he got everything out of it that he could. I remember coming back after spring break. We'd had like six practices. We had 20 practices back then. I don't know what it is now, Jeff. It's a lot less, I'm sure.
But oh, yeah.
We got taped up, and we went upstairs to watch the last practice before spring break. And while we were watching the tape and whatnot, Dooley comes in, shuts the lights on, and goes, "Man, there's been a lot of rain out there while you were watching the movies, and we're going to take the pads off, and we're going to go up to the gym and do a little running." And he took us up there, and he ran us to death. And we were walking on the path. You've been on that path. There was no rain.
Yeah.
It hadn't rained at all. He said he wanted to punish us because we were on spring break. So that was the kind of things that he did. We were able to offensively run the football quite well. My senior year, we had two losses, one to Tulane, who passed the ball over the place, and we lost at Notre Dame. Otherwise, we were you know, a really fine football team. And we went to, it was Dooley versus Dooley in the Gator Bowl. And that was probably, they knew each other inside and out. And it was a 7-3 score. They said the most boring Gator Bowl of all time.
Well, Don McCauley was my roommate when I went with you one time down to the Roman Gabriel golf tournament when David E. shaved my head at his house. And then when McCauley came in, I was in bed and he thought I was some kind of alien that infiltrated the hotel. Man, what a great person he is. And God, what a great player. And,
he means so much to us. He was the Charlie Choo Choo Justice was the big back way back when. He wasn't real big, but he was a great player. And the Choo Choo Justice era was very special back in the 40s. And we recognized that as a staff and loved having them back when they could be back. But Don was our guy. And to this day, he is revered. He walks into a room, everybody goes quiet, you know, because they want to see, hear, and feel his presence because he does give it off.
Absolutely. Well, I really just had a lot of fun and enjoyed watching you and your teammates together at different functions. That was enjoyable to me just to see the great unity that you all had and camaraderie between you. So, and that's very important for a winning football team.
No doubt about it. And I often say that, you know, the locker rooms, they're good these days, particularly when you're winning.
Yeah,
and I really love what Mac Brown's been able to do this year with the Tar Heels.
Yeah,
won a lot of close games, won on the road, undefeated on the road, I believe, and now they're going to play Clemson here in the ACC championship game, and they had a tough loss last week against Georgia Tech.
Yeah.
They snuck up on them. Some people might call it a trap game, but
hey,
they've won a lot of close ones. And I've been in the locker rooms where we're losing. I've talked about as a player now, and it's no fun. And I've been in the locker room when we're winning, and it's a lot of fun. And usually it's because we have good players, and they get along, and they want to play for each other.
Yep.
And I think that starts with the head coach. I mean, Dick Vermeil is one of those guys.
You know? Well, I mean, you talked about a quarterback, and Max certainly found a quarterback. So,
no doubt about it. He is special. And interestingly enough, I'm not sure if you know this, Jeff, but the offensive coordinator for the Tar Heels is Phil Longo.
Yeah.
He played for us at Glassboro State.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
He played for us. He was a backup fullback.
Wow.
That got on the field with special teams and got in there on short yardage situations. And he's paid a price. He's been all over the country coaching. He's got a wife and four kids. I'm still very close to him. And, it's right. Kind of cool that he's out
That's
of,
awesome.
He's out of my tree. And he's done a great job. He did a great job last year and the year before. And he's doing a great job right now with that quarterback, bringing him along. I just keep trying to encourage him. Will you please teach him how to slide?
Yeah.
You know, he tries to run people over.
Well, I see his name come up for head jobs quite frequently. So, he might land one of these days. I'm very familiar with him. Yes.
No doubt. Well, the other kind of the kids in our tree, look at Arthur Smith, head coach of the Falcons down there. You and I both had some frustrations with him because he was hurt most of the time, right?
Yeah.
But great family, great kid, hardworking, loves coaching. And, I pull for him every week. And the offensive coordinator for the Detroit Lions played ball for us at UNC, Ben Johnson. Yeah. Backup quarterback.
Yeah, I coached him. I know him very well.
He's great, great kid and smart. Really good.
Yeah, you could tell that he was always thinking. He was a very intelligent kid.
Yeah, no doubt.
And, Dwayne Ledford, who I coached at ECU, is Arthur Smith's offensive line coach.
That's correct, yeah.
And so now I'm going to fly down there for the Steelers game. And I said, Dwayne, tell me what I need to do, get a hotel, whatever. He goes, no, you're going to all the meetings with me and a walkthrough and everything. I said, oh, okay. So I'm waiting. I'm
That's
anxious
awesome.
To do it.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. You'll enjoy it.
Yeah. And so when you got to the Eagles, was it Mike McCormick was your head coach?
It was actually a gentleman by the name of Eddie Kayat.
Okay, I knew it was one of them.
He had played in the league, as did McCormick, and Eddie was one of those battlers, and he was from Moss Point, Mississippi, and he had a ton of expressions, and he was a funny guy, but he did not, in my opinion, have a very good staff.
Yeah,
McCormick took over after that year. We lost a bunch of games. He was hired from the Redskins. And, George Allen and that group and Mike McCormick, I think he'd been an all-pro offensive lineman at one point, but he was a good guy. He kind of played games a little bit with some of the players and he traded a bunch of guys in 75 and we lost a lot of leadership.
Yeah.
And when you lose that leadership and things go south, things continued to go south. And so he was fired after 75. And then they hired this guy out of UCLA. And I went, oh my God, a college coach is going to come in here and try to coach the pros, Dick Vermeil. And we learned right away that he was going to be a no nonsense guy. And I take a lot of what I did as a coach from him, get rid of the guys that don't want to work hard.
Yeah.
And at one point, I think about two or three years into his reign, we had only about 12 guys left from the original roster. So he had gotten rid of a bunch of players. He had no draft picks because they had traded two number ones to get Roman Gabriel. They had traded two number ones to get Bill Bubba Berge. And so we had no draft picks. I think the first draft pick they had that of any merit was like a number three or a number four. And they selected Reggie Wilkes, outside backer from Georgia Tech. And then the next year, the year that I'm coming off the surgery, the ACL reconstruction, they had their first round pick, and they select Jerry Robinson out of UCLA, who got recruited by Dick Vermeil, and he's a linebacker. They're trying to run me out of the show. You know? This isn't right. They drafted a linebacker in 78. Now they draft the first round pick, Jerry Robinson out of UCLA, with the first pick in the 79 draft. So they never got my job. Neither one of them.
No.
But they were good players. Yeah. Jerry was fun. I really worked hard with him to get him to learn how to watch tape and get ready for and prepare for games. Our defense became really good. We were number one overall, two or three years in a row. And offensively, hey, Dick wanted to run the football, and he got himself a quarterback named Ron Jaworski.
Oh, yeah.
But Wilbert Montgomery, tremendous running back. We developed an offensive line, had a lot of guys who went to Pro Bowls, Stan Walters, Jerry Sizemore, just to name a couple of them. Guy Morris, God bless him, but passed away 2 years ago. He was an all-pro center. We were really good with the offensive line. We had a couple tight ends that played, Keith Kreffling, John Spagnola, but Wilbert was our offense. And defensively, we were number one a couple 3 years there, and we had a great run, got to the Super Bowl in 1980 season, went down to New Orleans and kind of did a bad job on game day, and we lost. But fortunately for me, I got joined up with Dick again and coached it in the Super Bowl and won.
Yeah. Well, my question was going to be, what were the factors that took you through a 7-year grind to get to a Super Bowl with the Eagles? And you were there before, a few years before 76, but I know that the record starting in 76 was 4-10, and then 5-9, and then a 9-7 season, and then, 11-5 and 12-5 and so forth. But anything else you'd like to mention about the factors that took you through that 7-year grind?
We worked hard. We took on Dick's work ethic, and we survived. I mean, we went 7 weeks of two-a-days his first year, whole weeks of two-a-days, full pads every practice, and that's the way it was until we started to get some wins under our belt, and then he cut it back a little, not a lot, a little, but practice for the Eagles was daunting. I mean, normal practice schedule is Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday you kind of lay low. But our Friday practices, they're 3 hours long.
Yeah.
3 hours long. And occasionally I felt like we left some of that on the practice field. And we, as much as we talked to him about it, he didn't change much. He really did. He had his way of doing things, and that's the way it was gonna be. And we learned to appreciate him. A lot of us still stay in touch with that guy. I was up to see him get inducted in Canton last summer. Me and Don flew from Maine to Canton, and there's at least 25 Philadelphia Eagle players there. At least,
yeah.
That's saying something. Guys came from
absolutely.
All over. You know.
Well, Coach, I'm big on military principles. And so, what the Marines always say is the chief incalculable is the human dimension. And so when I think about your time at Carolina and I think about your time with the Eagles, I really think about the power of the human dimension. And I think that it was definitely prevalent through both of your experiences from everything I understand. So with the Eagles, for instance, what do you think were some common character traits that you all might have had?
I would say, we learned how to work better, more efficiently, and we learned how to play together much better. And once again, if you don't have enough talent, you're not going to win. It's just not going to happen. You got to have a quarterback. And we got Jaws. Jaws was a fine quarterback and very, very loyal to me during the 82 strike. And subsequently, you know, we've had some discussions about it. He thinks the strike tore us apart. And in some ways he might be right, but we had to go on strike. We had to do it. It had to be done. You know, we were fighting for free agency, which never got until they sued the NFL and won in court. But we wanted, first of all, safer turf. And yeah, they finally do have, I think, a safer turf. But, you know, with Jeff, you know, from that, the game that we play and the game that we love, it's violent. And the players are bigger, faster, stronger now. They're going to have ACLs. They're going to have, you know, they're going to have issues running and changing direction. So yeah, that's part of it. I mean, I think the best part, I think, is reflective in the way that our players turned out to see Dick Vermeil up there in Canton. There's so many guys came in. It's because we all loved each other. We loved playing together. And that's what the Marine Corps is about. I feel the same way about military.
Absolutely. Well, one question I had going back then is, you know, when I played, which is, you know, I think I graduated in 1980. I played for Salem University, West Virginia. I was a defensive back. But when you were in the NFL, were they still serving beer at lunch during camp?
We didn't get served beer at lunch. We certainly, when the practice was over, we headed right to a couple local bars and we got as much beer in as we could so that we could make the meetings. Because the meetings would start at 7. We came off the practice field at about 5:30. We're out in the bars and having 3, 4, 5, 6 beers so we could go eat some dinner, because you're exhausted by the end of the day after 2-a-day practices. So he threw a couple beers down, you get a little hungry.
Gotcha.
And we had the beers on the planes riding home. We got two each as we got in there. And some guys would, you know, trade this, trade that, to kind of try to get an extra beer or whatever. But I don't even think they don't even do that stuff anymore. They don't allow that.
Also, during that time period, of course, you know, being growing up around Pittsburgh, I was a Steeler fan. You know, we had all those guys together with the Steelers for so many years. I mean, it was amazing, you know, Joe Green and of course, Bradshaw and Jack Ham and Roy Girella, the kicker, and just, you know, so many guys together for so many years. And, you know, looking back at that with the Eagles, I mean, that had to be an important factor with you guys also being able to keep the same guys together.
I think that was a big part of it. And of course there was a price to pay to stay on that team. I mean, Dick didn't have any favorites.
Yeah.
I certainly was not one of them. He's to this day, he never calls me coach. Even though I coached for him several different places, he calls me John. He only calls coaches that have just been coaches coach. Right. You know, it's kind of funny. And, you know, the players that were able to hang in there, we didn't have a strength and conditioning coach. We had an assistant trainer ran our offseason program. And he was really good, really good. Wow. He got me back on the field after that ACL reconstruction. So we had a weight room that consisted of probably about 4 or 5 bench press benches and probably a couple of those things where you could do some squats inside that apparatus. So it just wasn't the same as it is today. It's so prominent. And you know more than anybody that I know about what it takes to be in good shape and play this great game.
That was probably the old Ricky Rack. You might have been on that Ricky Rack. that was, invented by, I don't remember Ricky's first name, but I think it showed up with the Steelers first. But, yeah, that goes back a ways. So, Coach, I'm going to get into a couple of things now. They're a little bit emotional for me, and you'll have to excuse me maybe. But, I really believe that just like your experience, because I observed you and I really kind of anything you ever said, I took to heart because I always felt like I could learn from you because you had such a great experience and you were respected by so many people. And I believe that you believe that things could turn at Carolina similar to how they turned with the Eagles. I just really feel like you felt like it was going to take the same type of commitment, the same type of things that you experienced as a player to turn it around. With the Eagles, it didn't happen overnight, obviously. And it wasn't going to happen with people that weren't committed. And it wasn't going to happen just with talent. It was going to happen with character and hard work. And so when I go back and I look at 2001, and I see on defense, we lost Earl Hood. We lost Quincy Monk. We lost Julius Peppers, Mercedes Perry, Anthony Perkins, Ryan Sims, Joey Evans, David Thornton, Billy D. Greenwood, and then and as well on offense, and let's not forget about our kicker, Jeff Reed, but on offense, Ronald Curry and Zach Hilton and Sam Aiken, and of course, a guy like Corey Bailey. And there's probably at least 10 of these guys that went on to play in the NFL.
Really good players. Really good players. All they wanted, an opportunity to win.
Yeah.
And they had not had it. And because they had not had it, and the coach was under scrutiny all the time, the predecessor, recruiting went down.
Yeah.
So I inherited all these great players.
Yep. And
what do we do? Right out of the box, what do? We go out and play defending champion Oklahoma.
Yep.
And give them a game. We go to Maryland, and we are defeated by the eventual ACC champion. And then we go to Texas to play the Longhorns. Yeah. I mean, we got three losses, and we came back against Oklahoma. We kind of got out of sorts at the Maryland game. But we gave Texas a game out there in Austin. And I'm saying to myself, you know, we're 0-3. We're getting ready to play SMU. And I said, we're going to get a win here. And then 9/11 happens. And all the games were postponed.
Yeah.
So we are now faced with playing the mighty Florida State Seminoles at home. And I'm expecting this is another top 10 team that we're playing against. And we beat the pants off them.
Yeah.
Our players stood up and wanted to win. And proved that they were capable of winning offensively. I went to the two-headed quarterback that game. Darian would play two series, and Ronald Curry would play two series. Darian had gotten some experience late in the games, particularly out there at Oklahoma. And Ronald was having some issues. He was having some, and I had a long talk with that young man. I love Ronald Curry. There's nothing not to love about that guy. And he played basketball. He was a starting point guard for the Tar Heels. And he never really developed as a quarterback because he missed spring practice every year. But what great character, what a great human being. He's now the quarterback's coach for the New Orleans Saints.
Awesome.
Love that guy. But we had good players, and the players, they wanted to win so bad. And then we went on a streak. I think we won five in a row. And we finally got beat by Georgia Tech down there at Georgia Tech. And Ronald, as a matter of fact, didn't play in that game because he was going to a relative's funeral. So
yeah,
we didn't have that.
Point, yeah,
Go ahead.
My point here is, you know, I show up at Pro Day. I think Vermeil was there that year. Everybody was there. I'm looking at these guys. I'm thinking to myself, you know, we don't have a whole lot of guys on the team. And these guys leave that look like these guys.
No.
We got a lot of work to do.
Yeah. No a lot of work. Doubt about it, Jeff.
And, you know, that was a huge loss, losing all those guys on defense. And then you called me and you said, meet me at Timmy Kirkpatrick's place. And I went in there and you had a look on your face. I didn't know if you and Timmy were going to have to fight somebody coming in a bar. What was going on that day? But you said, hey, John Tenuta is leaving.
Yes.
And you know what? When you lose your whole defense and you're counting on your defensive coordinator to be out there recruiting and finding people to replace these guys, and then all of a sudden you realize that he's leaving, that was a huge hit.
Very.
That might have been.
Very hurtful. Very yeah. hurtful. And you know, Dave Huxtable told me later that Tenuta was going to try his very best to get away because he said, this is a graveyard. This defense we have this year is great. There's nothing, yeah. there's nothing left in the cupboard. There's nothing there. And we found that out. And we found that out for the next 2 years. We didn't have defense. And it was so hard standing on that side.
Well, I'm not real big on the transfer portal and the NIL, but I do think that UNC Chapel Hill has the resources for those types of things to pretty much compete with anybody across the country when it comes to that. So that might have actually helped us at that point. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I do know. Yeah.
I agree with you.
Because we had
great for us back then.
We had some kids stacked in there that were going to be a tough challenge for us to develop. You know, it wasn't going to happen overnight.
Right. No doubt.
And, you know, I'm just speaking facts right now. You know, I have absolutely nothing to gain or lose by not just speaking facts right now. So, you know, we went into that next season and now you got Miami of Ohio, Syracuse, Texas, and Arizona State on the schedule. And Miami of Ohio, you think, well, yeah, you should be able to beat them. Well, guess who was the quarterback? Roethlisberger was in his senior year.
Big Ben.
So, hey, good luck with that one.
That guy was phenomenal. He probably was the best quarterback we faced in my 6 years there at Carolina. Right. He's very, very special, as we all know.
Yeah. Now, we still managed to beat Syracuse. I don't know if that was a 3-overtime game or what it was, but that might have been the following year, the 3-overtime game. And then we beat Arizona State on the road.
Yep.
I remember we flew in at daylight off of that one.
That's for sure.
But, Coach, you know, and then the next year, of course, it was Wisconsin, Syracuse again, ECU and Arizona State again. So, you know, you're not really getting a break and you're out of conference schedule anywhere along the line, really. ECU was down that year. I do remember that. But that was a win. And then I think Syracuse was a 3-overtime win. And then the following year, you know, we're working. Okay, we're working because the following year we are 6-5 and make it to a bowl.
Absolutely. We rode the quarterbacks back a little bit.
Yeah.
Defensively, we got better because our freshmen became sophomores and our sophomores became, juniors. And we grew up a little bit on defense.
Right.
You know, I had to let Huxtable go. That hurt a great deal. He's a fine man and a fine football coach. But it was time. It was time to make a change. And we brought in Marvin Sanders. And a couple other guys on defense and we got a little bit better.
Yeah. And that year we had William and Mary, Louisville, Utah, and Miami. Was Miami in the ACC yet?
They were not. They were scheduled to come in the following year.
So we had, those were our out of conference games, as I remember. We did have a good win over Miami.
Number three or number four in the country, undefeated 7-0.
Louisville was in their heyday.
Big time.
I mean, they were like winning 11, 12 games during that time period. So you think scheduling them as an out-of-conference team might be a win for you, but that was a real tough deal right there, too, scheduling them. And Utah was incredible that year, as I remember.
Utah went to a bowl game, a big bowl game, and I think they ended up like number five in the country.
Yeah.
They were that good. Not a real fan of their head football coach, but at least back then, and still am not a big fan of his, but because he was running up the score. You know, we're down by 20 points in the fourth quarter, and he's still throwing the ball with Alex Smith, one of the greatest quarterbacks Utah's ever had. Anyway, you got to stop him, and we didn't stop him at all. And that was a long, long ride back from Utah.
Yeah, no doubt. I just remember one of their defensive Samoan players calling out Madison Hedgecock before the game. Hey, tough guy.
Oh, Madison Hedgecock, there's a wonderful, wonderful person and a really tough player. How about we moved him from fullback to defensive tackle or defensive end midseason because we had so many players that were, quite frankly, they just weren't tough enough, Jeff. I mean, you're best to make them tougher, but hey, sometimes it's just not there. But we did that, and I said, Madison, I promise that I will move you back to fullback your senior year, and we did. Played about 5-6 years in the NFL.
Yeah, he had a really good career with the Giants. Madison Power Clean 385, and of course, Jason Brown. There were some of my best people in the weight room. Jason Brown, Power Clean 419, and jerked it, which was nuts.
Special human being there too, boy. What a big heart that man has.
Yeah. Yeah, we had some good kids. And then Wisconsin the next year, Louisville again, and Utah again, and we actually beat Louisville at home, as I remember. And we lost to Wisconsin 14-5. And then I think we lost an overtime game to Maryland, which was crazy. That would have put us in a bowl again.
Yes.
And that one hurt.
That season, if I regret anything, we just couldn't push it over the top. I mean, Matt Baker was our quarterback. He did a fine job. He was a good quarterback. He was a tough quarterback, but we just didn't make enough plays to get that extra win. That overtime game to Maryland was killer. It really was.
Yeah.
And we had a couple balls thrown over top of our heads. I know that Marvin Sanders was fighting with one of the cornerbacks. He was upset with him and didn't start him, and then put him back in the game. Oh, it's just crazy stuff. Hey, they're young kids. They're 18, 19, 20-year-old kids. They do crazy stuff.
Well, Coach, we had one more year, and we had we were, as you said, lacking at the quarterback position, which was definitely impactful. And, our out-of-conference schedule was Rutgers. Shiano was getting that thing turned around. They were pretty solid. UCF was in their heyday. That was maybe the best UCF team ever. Somehow we ended up with them on the schedule.
Yep.
We beat Furman, and then, of course, we had Notre Dame away. And, that was a tough one, too, but tough to go out to Notre Dame and beat Notre Dame.
We played up really well up there. We gave them all they could handle.
Yeah.
I was really proud of the team afterwards.
Of course, the Virginia game, it all came down. Finished the season with wins over NC State and Duke, which was a good way to go out, at least. And, Coach, I can't tell you how much I appreciate. I know you told Butch that he should retain me. And I really appreciate that to this day. And because, you know, previous to that, I had turned Butch down at Miami. And so when I saw that he was coming in, I was like, well, Butch is not going to retain me because I turned him down at Miami. So
sure.
Jay Gazinski had called and offered me a job at BC. And so Butch called me in and told me he wanted to keep me, which I was very appreciative because my son was playing high school football then. Definitely wanted to see him play. But I really appreciate your support very much. And I definitely want to tell you that.
I appreciate that. I do very much. And I'll just say this about Dick Bedore. He's not the strongest guy around, and he had people beating on his door to get me gone, and made that decision.
Yeah.
After the Virginia game up there in Charlottesville, I think it was a bye week, and I'm very proud of the way I handled everything. I'm glad. Yeah. That he gave me the opportunity to finish the season. That's what I think that was important. I think it was important for our players, and I think it was important for our staff. And I met with Butch and I told him about my staff, and I certainly was very complimentary of you, and glad that he was smart enough to retain you and continue to make things move, make things better. But that was a tough time. I'm fortunate once again to have a very strong wife. She's a former coach herself.
Sure.
I met her at Glassboro State 33 years ago, 34 years ago. And she coached basketball and softball, and a very fiery spirited lady she is. And
Coach, we all still love Dawn. Michelle still talks about her, and what an awesome person she was. And I just, we enjoyed so much the family time with y'all after the victories at your house and so forth, and doing things together. I mean, it's we will always remember those times. Those were some of the best times in my coaching career, no doubt about it, because those things are important. And the one thing that I want to emphasize, about your experience at UNC is that I know that you did not want to compromise character for talent. And I've been in some recruiting meetings, and when I think we saw a very good athlete who everybody was on, and he would not run to the ball. He would not pursue the ball if it went the other way. And you said, I don't want to take that kid because he will not turn and pursue the ball. He quits on a play. I don't care how much talent he's got. And Coach, I really think there's something to be said for that. Somebody else in there said, well, maybe we can coach that. Well, maybe, maybe not. But if he's going to be a guy who's not going to give you effort someday, and he's got a ton of talent, and he maybe has some influence over other people, and he's still not giving you the effort that you need, that's not good.
No doubt. No doubt about that.
That's going to be a poison.
Yeah.
So I commend you 100%. For sticking to what you believed down to the end. You didn't care what the consequence was. You were going to stick to what you learned under Dick Vermeil, what you learned as a player, what you learned under Dooley. And I don't forget that stuff, Coach. I mean, I know that about you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And there's one other coach that I coached for in Kansas City, Marty Schottenheimer, no-nonsense guy. That guy had a big impact on me as well. Our staff was family-like, and Dick Vermeil's staff was family-like. That's one thing that I wanted to do with our staff. I wanted it to be family-like, everybody working together. Let's enjoy our time. And, you know, recruiting is recruiting, and you have to have good players to win. But those guys that are, you know, great effort players, maybe not as talented, they're going to win you football right. games as well. There's no doubt about that. It always happens. I'm one of those guys. I was really talented. I was a 4.85 guy at my best on a 40-yard dash, and I was 216 pounds. But you know, I loved the game, and I was smart enough to run the defense for the defensive coordinator Marion Campbell. He'd send the defense in, and then I'd make all the adjustments. It was so much fun, yeah. so challenging, and I never missed a single. And my players and my teammates, they all knew it. They knew it. Nobody in the film room would ever stand up and say, "I didn't get the call." That's BS. I promise you got right. the call. They never did it. So that's what I'm all about. And you know, when things went down, what am I going to do? Am I going to go back and coach some more? I'm at the job that I wanted. This is the only job I ever really, really, really wanted. But I've got some experience with Marty, got some experience with Dick. I liked coaching with Jim Haslett down there in New Orleans. But, you know, I got the dream job. I'm going to go pursue some other stuff now. So I got into the radio, TV stuff. And then Tom Condon, super football agent, calls me and says, "Hey, can you train Luke Kuechly for me? 7 weeks yeah. down at IMG in Bradenton, Florida." Sure, I'll do that. The next year, can you train Manti Te'o down there at IMG again? I said, sure. So I take 6-7 weeks and go down there and enjoy the Florida sun. It's 75, 80 degrees in January and February. Hey, I need to find a place down here. And that's what we eventually did.
Absolutely. Well, Coach, I'll just say it again. You know, I mean, I'm so proud of who you were through that whole experience and what I learned from you. And I'll never forget that.
So, all good, buddy. All very good.
Appreciate it. Now, I want to ask you, are there any commonalities that you saw with Bill Dooley and Dick Vermeil?
Yes, certainly. The work ethic, particularly on the field, is something that they are very, very much the same. The physical part of the game was emphasized by Bill Dooley. The physical yeah. part of the game was certainly emphasized by Dick Vermeil and his staff. We hit our practices. We're just about live. Everything except taking the player, the runner down on the ground. It was very spirited. It was with Dick, it was, everything was laid out. I mean, he was one of the guys that I think really brought another element of organization to the field of play in his practice schedules, his practice routines. And I used most of those for me at Carolina. We did the same type of stuff. But, you know, I pulled back on some of the hitting because after that first year, we didn't have any players. We had to do our very best to keep them healthy. But anyway, those two guys, certainly very impactful on my life. And to this day, I'm thankful to be called a friend of Dick Vermeil. He doesn't call me coach. He calls me John.
Well, the other question I had was Vermeil the same guy with the Rams as he was with the Eagles? Because obviously the game changed and people changed. Was he the same?
Well, he tried to be. And when we came back out of training camp, we got into the first practice down in St. Louis at our practice facility, and he had the team out there for like 3 hours, pro team out there 3 hours. And it was, you know, St. Louis gets hot and humid like any place out there in the Midwest. I mean, it was an 85 degree day and it was super humid. We had eight players go down and they're all have IVs in them as we go inside. They protested and would not practice the next day.
Yeah.
The players said, "Coach, we're not doing that again. We're done."
Yeah.
And he had to change a great deal. And he did, you got to utilize that time in the right way. So I think he learned and the practices went from being 3 hours to an hour and 45 minutes, something like that.
Yeah.
And we weren't very good. Matter of fact, we lost a lot of football games those first 2 years, but we were striving to change the character of our entire football team.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that he brought to the St. Louis Rams, change and more character. And then we traded for Marshall Faulk, and then we got an offensive lineman on free agency out of Green Bay. And then we got a couple other guys on defense. We went from being probably one of the worst defenses to like number six the year we go to the Super Bowl. We are number one run defense, which I was in charge of. And then when Dick retires again at the end of the season after we win the Super Bowl, Mike Martz comes in. Mike Martz wants to bring his own linebacker coach in. And he comes down to my office and says, "I don't believe in the co-coordinators." And I said, "Coach, it's not broke. Don't try to fix it. We're number one in the NFL. Number one in the NFL in run defense."
Yeah.
Fired me the next day. So that's the not for long league sometimes, you know?
Oh, yeah. I hear you.
But interestingly enough, and I'll tell you this story. I think it's true. Going to the Saints probably was the best thing that could have happened to me, because the guy down there that happened to be the executive director of the Sugar Bowl watched the Saints defense get changed around completely, went from being number 25 to like number eight, number seven or eight. And, you know, I'm helping run that defense. And when the coach at Virginia Tech, the name escapes me now, Frank Beamer, when he accepted the job in Chapel Hill and then went home and rejected the job, Paul Houlihan, the executive director of the Sugar Bowl, I think got in touch with Dick Bedore and said, "I think you should look at this guy as your next coach."
Yeah.
Now, Paul Houlihan died about 5 days ago.
Yeah, I saw that.
He was at our reunion. He had a blast.
Wow.
Wonderful, wonderful human being. Super positive, full of energy. He had a great time with his wife up there. I'm so glad that he came, because he just had knee replacement surgery.
Yeah.
Died apparently of a heart attack in his sleep watching television.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, you know, I saw our guy, the sheriff, was there too.
Yeah. He was at the reunion. Yes, sir. Charles Blackwood is one of my favorite people of all time.
He really loved that guy, man. I had lunch with him a few months ago.
Yeah. Great human being. Really is.
Absolutely. Well, Coach, like one more question here, maybe a couple more crucial factors in building a defense in facing the nature of an offense in 2022. You know, what are your thoughts there?
I tell you what, you better have speed, and you better learn how to tackle. And of course, that's harder and harder to teach these days, because there's only a certain amount of days that you can put the pads on, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
speed and tackling. You know, I don't care what defense you play, whether it's a 4-3 or a 4-2, or you know. Most of these teams now with the wide receivers and the running backs that can kick. I mean, you're gonna be presented with offensive formations with five quick receivers, and you better be able to, number one, disguise coverages, and number two, have guys that can cover people. And sometimes they're gonna be by themselves. The number one receivers out there next to the sidelines, hey, sometimes you corners, you just go out there and cover, because the inside throws are the easiest ones to make. So you better get those guys covered. You better have enough corners that are good enough to play for you and safeties that can come up and tackle. You still want to get defensive linemen that can rush the passer and put some pressure on the quarterback, get in his face. But you've got to be able to have fast people on your defense, and you've got to have people that will tackle.
Yep. Well, I appreciate that. I had Pagano on last. He was his aired last night. It actually aired, and pretty much the same deal. You know, you got to have speed. And when you look at these quarterbacks now, how athletic and fast they are, making plays and running for first downs, it's a tough deal. I said, "Hey, man, you going to spot a quarterback, or what you going to do?" I mean, you know.
You can't have enough spies out there. You got to get some people that can cover. You got to get somebody in the quarterback's face, that's for sure.
Well, a little bit on retirement here. I know you got the 2020 philosophy. Tell me a little bit about that.
That was one of my favorites. Oh, yeah. I can't go through that the way I'd like to do it on this show, but you know what it's like.
Yep.
And I am so, we built our dream house over there near Wilmington out on the Intercoastal Waterway. I think you've been in it. It was a beautiful home. But, you know, for me, when football season's over, I want to get outside. We did that mentoring for Keekly and Manti Te'o. I just got a taste of Florida, what it's like in the wintertime. So we got our place in Maine for the summertime, a little cabin, a little 1,100 square foot cabin up there right on the water. And we got this place down here. My wife's become quite the golfer. She's playing 3 or 4 times a week now. And when she's not playing golf, she's playing pickleball, which is taking over the world. You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I'm just hanging. I'm a little beat up right now. Those 13 seasons on that turf, every once in a while I get a little bugaboo, and I've got a little back issue right now. So I can't swing a golf club because it just hurts too much. So yeah. I was in the pool doing pool aerobics today. And as soon as we get my top of my outdoor kitchen mounted back on, because it got torn off during the storm. I'll be out there grilling. So
nice.
I'm digging where we're living. We're in a gated golf community, 27 holes, we're having a good time, and awesome. I think we've earned the right.
No doubt. Well, I live on a golf course here in Greenville, Ironwood, and I have a cart, so I can roll myself right out there anytime I want, which is really nice because I live on number 4, and I am usually in the 80s. My best score here is an 82. So terrific. That makes me happy anytime I'm in the 80s.
That's great. That's great
and,
stuff.
That's been a lot of fun. So sounds like the Don and John life in 2022 is very rewarding.
It's good stuff.
Glad to hear it.
All good stuff. And I got myself a 12-year-old Weimaraner. So okay. You know how much I like those.
Oh, yeah.
And please tell Michelle we love her and we miss her, and we'll meet again sometime.
No doubt. Tell me that city you live in again.
We're in Naples, Florida.
Okay. All right.
Yep. And it's your bed's waiting for you right here, man.
Yeah. We're traveling around. We went to Arizona last, and we're thinking about where we're going to go in the next couple. And, I've been down to Key West a few times, and you always tell me to look up Luigi Amona, but Luigi, I'm scared to look him up as far as what he's going to get me into down there. So
that is some very good game planning right there, staying away from Luigi Amona, my old roommate. That man is crazier than anybody I've ever known. He was the fiercest competitor that I've ever seen. Yeah. Our special teams captain, 5'9", 175 pounds.
Yep. Well, I met him, and, yes, He is a crazy man. There's no doubt about it. But he was definitely representative of the Eagles and what they stood for sure.
No doubt. No doubt.
Well, Coach, I'm going to go ahead and close it out. Thank you so much for being on. It's been wonderful to talk to you. So this is Jeff Connors, Absolute Empowerment, armoredlife.org. Always remember that faith is believing what you can't see, and a reward for believing is you get to see it.
Love it.
Thanks a lot, and God bless. See you later, Coach. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to Absolute Empowerment with Coach Jeff Connors on The Sports Objective. Join us every Monday night for a new edition of the show. Listen to the show pretty much everywhere podcasts are found. Be sure to follow us on social media at TheSportsOBJ on Twitter and TikTok, at TheSportsObjective on Instagram. Like and follow our Facebook page and subscribe to our YouTube channel. As always, we appreciate you listening to the show, and go Pirates!